Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
We're going to go over to America now and talk to Andrew Pasquette. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Peter. Hi, it's nice to be with you on the show.
Now, we've got a book here, Dreamer, 20 Years of Psychic Dreams and How They Changed My Life. I've got to ask about this. Tell me.
What do you want me to tell you about it?
Tell me about the book and how it changed your life.
Well, I'll tell you what happened is that I, a long, long ago, like many of us, was quite materialistic, and I looked at our lives on this planet as being all there was, that when we die, we're extinguished, there's nothing more to it, and that there was no grand, scheme behind anything. It was just a whole bunch of random stuff. And then I started having dreams that appeared to be matching up with later events. My wife told me this was happening, and I said she was out of her mind, actually, and told her to quit saying such silly things. But she kept saying it, and it kept happening, and finally to convince her that I knew what I was talking about and she had no idea, I started recording my dreams and found out she was right. And the fact is that 20 years later, I now accept the fact that our consciousness does not vanish as soon as our bodies die. I find that my attitude to a great many things has changed considerably, and I don't think I'm anywhere near as materialistic, both in the literal sense or in the more simplistic economic sense that most people think of when they think of the word materialistic. And I'm much happier.
Do you dream every night?
As far as I can tell, I do. I don't necessarily remember everything every night, but out of the last 20 years that I've been recording these things, I've averaged one record every 3 days for the last 20 years solid. So I've got over 3,100 records now.
Was there one particular dream that made you realize that something was happening to you?
I can't really say that there was one that did it. It was really an accumulation of a group. The comments from my wife, and then there was, I would say there's three crucial ones. I dreamt about a air show disaster that happened in Ramstein, Germany in 1985 prior to its happening. I think about 2-3 weeks before it happened, something like that. And that one was kind of the one that tipped me over the edge. And I feel kind of guilty even saying that because I've got dreams with that I think are far more evidential in the sense that I recorded all the details beforehand. And in this case, I wasn't recording my dreams at that time. But that was the one where I was just kind of smacked in the face with the realization that, hey, wait a minute, I really am having dreams of the future.
Why do you think you're having the dreams? Why not me? Why you?
Actually, I think most people do have dreams like this. But for many people, they either are too interested in the other things that are going on in their life to be able to see what's behind their dreams. As I see it, it's kind of like you have a TV channel that's broadcasting some really fascinating, important information to everybody constantly, and then you have your own thoughts that deal with what you're doing while you're awake, and that's like interference or static or just noise. And so for most people, the image on this mental TV set is just a whole bunch of electronic snow because their day-to-day thoughts are interfering so much with the image. And with other people, for instance, people who meditate a great deal, I think they've got a clearer image because they're able to focus their thoughts better, or they just have fewer things to interfere with a pure memory of this image. And in my case, I have a feeling it has to do with the fact that I'm an artist. I have noticed in the literature that there are a great many artists who tend to notice these kinds of things. And I don't think it's because artists have crazy personalities. I think it's because artists are spend a great deal of time focused very carefully on very small things. And to do this well, you really have to develop almost a meditative skill. And so I think that's what's causing it.
Now, you've written a book about this, but what good is it in the respect that you dream something? How do you know it's going to happen? Because sometimes it doesn't happen and sometimes it does. So what can you do with it? What can you focus on with this?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, when I get that kind of question, it's like, okay, now why don't you go ahead and dream about the winning lottery numbers or this kind of thing? And it's almost like it's a superpower or something, which is not how I look at it at all. I look at it kind of in the traditional yogic sense of it being a siddhi, which is a kind of a side effect of mental discipline. It's not something that necessarily is a end in itself. It's something that is a part of something else which is far more important, and that is just it's a sign of mental discipline, if nothing else. But as far as practical results, I have to say that the mere change in outlook in my life is already worth the trouble it took me to figure all this stuff out. I mean, I spent a number of years analyzing these things and comparing the things I dreamt about to real-world events and checking and verifying or not whether these things are veridical. And in so doing, I came to realize that that the world was a very different place from what I thought it was. And I think in doing so, I became far more sensitive to the people around me and the events that I was a part of. And I think I became a better person as a result. I am not running around winning lotteries every day, and I am not using psychokinesis to avert plane crashes. I don't even know if I could do something like that. I would be kind of surprised if something like that happened. But the simple change in my life, the simple change of attitude, I think is actually a very powerful one. You have plenty of people running around spending plenty of money seeing psychiatrists or psychologists or buying self-help books or trying to improve themselves in one way or another to free themselves of depression, all sorts of things that are a quality of their feeling of not fitting in to the environment around them in some way or another, at least not in the way they like. And in my case, these dreams have answered a lot of those kinds of questions for me, and I feel far more comfortable with myself than I did before.
So you only use this for yourself, not for any public use at all?
Well, there have been a couple of occasions when I've been in a position to warn somebody of something, and I have done it. But there have also been other occasions when I've been in a position to do that, and I haven't done it, to my chagrin, which I actually feel rather badly about. If you read the book, you know very well about one of those incidents, which had to do with the suicide of a friend of mine.
Well, that brings you down to earth with a bump when you tell you something like that. Do you, when you were working yourself out with these dreams, were you verging or worried about going mad because of it? I mean, were you sort of, were you getting yourself in a state thinking, well, hang on, whoa, this is, it's not happening to anybody else. Why me?
Well, I did wonder about why me. The first question, or rather the first answer that presented itself to my mind was that it must be happening to everyone. They just don't remember it. And then on closer examination and after talking to other people, I have the impression that it is more common than people think, a lot more common. But on the other hand, I no longer believe that it is literally happening with everyone, because I now have the impression that the kind of information that someone gets through dreams may differ from person to person based on, well, basically what the purpose of their life is, what kinds of things they're supposed to be learning here, that kind of thing. And by the way, when I make a statement like that, I'm including an assumption that many of your listeners may not understand, and that is that as I see it, reincarnation is an absolute reality. It's something that happens, and that we do have a purpose in our lives, and that purpose may actually be, strangely enough, to deny psychic things and precognitive dreams, just as a way to be a sounding board for somebody else who has them, so that other people can think about the conflict and come to their own conclusions. So I feel like we all have our own purpose here, and sometimes that's going to involve being open to this kind of stuff, and sometimes it isn't.
You just opened my mind to when I was a child. I've always dreaded reincarnation because I like my life as it's been. I always wonder if I came back, would I be better off as a person, lesser as a person, miserable, ill, sick, and something I grew up worrying about when I was a child.
Well, the funny thing about that is that the mere fact that you're incarnated, okay, already makes reincarnation mechanically feasible. The fact is, if you accept that your consciousness is not the same as your body, then you are incarnated, which is mechanically identical to reincarnation. Therefore, there's no bar to reincarnation unless there's some kind of traffic cop out there. You know, you're not allowed. And as far as the conditions changing, my understanding is that they change a great deal, but maybe not necessarily in the way you would expect. Because it really has to do with learning opportunities. And so some people may take life conditions that seem not comfortable, but but they're actually very appropriate for that person at that time. In fact, actually, I had a dream about this a while back. It's not in my book, but in it, a monk came to me and he showed me some things about reincarnation. One of the things he said was, it is better to live a blameless life than to wish for and get a comfortable one, okay? Meaning that the quality of the experience is determined by your interaction with that experience and not by the level of relative comfort that you experienced during the life, which I think actually makes a lot of sense. And I think it's very true as well. So, you know, it kind of reminds me of this moment when I was living in Hollywood and I was just driving down, I think it was Vineland Avenue, and I saw this boat go by behind this gigantic 4x4, and it had the words "to die for" written across the back of this outlandishly huge boat. And I was thinking, and it just made me think of all those bumper stickers that say he who dies with the most toys wins. And I'm thinking, this is not what life's about. Life's about the quality of the experience. So when I read about you, for instance, knowing what's important in life and stopping your radio program to go deal with a caller who sounds like he's in trouble, you have your priorities straight. That kind of thing is the kind of thing that tells me, anyway, that a person's living their life with quality.
Andrew, what made you write the book?
Well, I'd gotten lots and lots of questions from people over the last 20 years. But I have to say, it was the primary reason is that it was very frustrating to live through all this stuff and at the same time be surrounded completely by people who really couldn't talk about it very, very well. And then when you combine that with the questions and the fact that I found myself answering giving the same answers over and over again, I thought, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and put this all down in one place. And then people ask me questions, they've got my book, and the whole thing's out there. It's very hard to try to explain this stuff in a few sentences. Usually what happens is cognitive dissonance sets in almost immediately, and you can't get past the first few sentences. Like, for instance, when I'll say, now, keep in mind, I was an atheist, and I didn't believe in psychic stuff, and I usually would get stopped right there. Then the other person says, oh, come on, you believe in this stuff now. Obviously, you couldn't have been that much of an atheist. You couldn't have been that materialistic. You must be exaggerating somehow. But, you know, I'm not. And nevertheless, those conversations tended to stop really early on for that reason. So I thought, you know, I'm going to write it. I'm going to get it all out there all at once, and nobody can cut me off. Does that sound fair?
And I certainly wouldn't cut you off because I find you fascinating. I'm still stuck on the fact a monkey came to tell you the last revelation in your dream.
Wait a minute. I think you've got me mixed up with something else.
I thought you said a monkey spoke to you.
No, a monk.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought you said a monkey. I've been sitting here with my mouth open for about half an hour. A monk. I had this vision, this monkey talk. Do you see? It's the American accent. I just missed out on that one. So it was a monk, bless him. I'm sorry about that. I've just been stuck in the time warp there for a second, thinking about this monkey.
I'm very glad that you got that cleared up, because...
Because I would have put the phone down and gone, oh, my word, monkey. Right, fine. When you say it's changed your life, briefly, what way has it changed your life from what you were?
I have to say, I care about people more. I hate to say that because it makes it sound like I didn't care about people before, but I have to say, I don't think I did so much. When I was younger, I was really absolutely focused on earning money and on just bettering my material circumstances. That's really all I cared about. I remember being very rude to people who had religious sensibilities and basically I was skeptical to the point of being, I think, offensive. And if for no other reason but that, I am no longer so quick to take an arrogant attitude towards other people. I think that's a huge gain right there. But it goes beyond that. I mean, it's not just recognizing that other people are actually, filled with all sorts of wonderful qualities to appreciate and enjoy, but also that I'm a part of that too, and you know, and I've got all this growth to make. It's a real humbling thing to be confronted with all these psychic experiences and to realize that there's so many things, so much bigger than oneself, And I think it's important that everyone have an opportunity to feel that humility at some point in their life. And I'm just really thankful that I've had that opportunity myself.
The book's called Dreamer, 20 Years of Psychic Dreams and How They Changed My Life. Andrew Pockrath, thank you for joining me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot, Pete.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.